Horoscope Brasa.
That's our intro.
It's the top six in your back.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Bioscope Brasa Presents Top 6, where we each list our top 3 picks for any movie topic we happen to come up with that week. Also, stick around for our recommendation segment at the end, where we recommend a movie you possibly haven't seen yet or haven't seen in a long time. My name is Ross.
And I'm Jody.
Our top 6 for this week are movies that are based on books. These are movies that were books prior. And this term books also includes comic books.
Very Los Clos.
That's not Los Clos. Comic books are books too, Jody.
Hashtag.
Hashtag. Comic books are books too. Okay, they just happen to have pictures. And I heard a person put it this way. If you take the best writer in the world and you take the best artist in the world and they collaborate on a project, they'll come up with a comic book.
I think that's a fair assessment.
Thank you. So comic books are books too. And also, we make the rules, so fuck you.
Exactly.
Jody's very excited to go first.
So excited I'm going first on this one.
Listen, yo.
Number three.
My number three. Believe it or not, this is a movie that is number three on the IMDb list of films. And has been for like the last 20 years, I think. The Godfather.
Easy pick.
That's my number three. That means I have two better movies than that still coming.
In your opinion.
In my opinion.
Yes.
So, The Godfather, written by Mario Puzo, was also who wrote the screenplay for the film and was very involved and worked very closely with Brian De Palma on the film.
That's why it's so good, man.
That's why this bloody movie is so good,
dude.
Yeah. This film, I mean, everyone knows the character of Don Corleone from this film. It was not necessarily a breakout for Al Pacino, but something that established him as a A-list superstar, I think. Also had James Caan in the role of Sonny. Again, brilliant, brilliant casting.
To the point where if you have Al Pacino in a mafia movie, it already has some sort of legitimacy.
Exactly. His gravitas is just like, that makes it a legit film. This movie, I actually saw the film first before reading the books. And I usually do not like doing that.
That is rare for you.
I do not like doing that because then it's almost like I've got too much of the movie in my head and I can't create my own pictures and create the characters in the way I see them. Be that as it may, the book is so good that I was still enthralled as I was reading it.
Mm.
They somehow melded the stories of Godfather 2 and The Godfather into the one book. And just played out beautifully. I think that this movie, as I said, it has pitch-perfect casting. Everyone brings their A-game into every character in that they play. Even down to Talia Shire as the younger Corleone sister.
Yeah.
Brilliant, brilliant casting. The soundtrack is amazing this film. I mean, you can just picture that mandolin just playing now. You know, that
give us a taste.
You know, it's the
spot on.
Haunting, haunting soundtrack that as soon as you hear that, you know exactly which film it is that you are watching. And probably the cherry on the cake was the absolute powerhouse performance of Marlon Brando as Don Corleone.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone could have thought it would be that perfect.
Yeah. I mean, if someone does a Godfather impression, they do Marlon Brando.
You are doing Brando.
Yeah.
I think that, as we said, the director in this film was so respectful of the material going into it. He embraced it. He engaged with the author. They together came up with a vision for the film. And I think you can see that throughout. And I think that this movie excels because any additions that they've made actually enhances the story in the best ways possible.
I can't argue with that shit.
You can't. It's the Godfather.
It's the Godfather. I'm not going to argue with it. I'm not so deep into it like you, but I've seen it like a few times and I feel like it's something that you must watch. I keep trying to get my wife to watch it, but I don't think she has the patience.
I've got Jenna to do Godfather 1 and 2 on like consecutive weekends.
Oh, my word. No, we would have to. Yeah, we would probably have to do the same thing.
Yeah.
It is a pity about Godfather 3.
Yeah. We don't discuss that.
Okay.
Brian De Palma. So unfortunately, his other films bombed, and he had to come and make that one.
Sofia Coppola also was, yeah. Hey boy.
At least she realized she's not an actress. Yes. And she went into directing.
Great things directing, but as an actress, I think no.
Just no.
No, computer says no. Yeah, not going to argue with that. I refuse to. I'm a little scared. I don't want to find a horse's head in my, in my bed.
I'll make you offer you can't refuse.
My top three is as good as The Godfather.
Is that dessert?
All right, okay, take it easy. But it's very special to me, and the movie is The Crow, starring Brandon Lee. You know The Crow. You know The Crow.
We love The Crow.
But for people who don't know The Crow, it is Brandon Lee's last film, and Brandon Lee is the son of Bruce Lee.
Mm-hmm.
That's not even... I mean, it is significant, but that's not even what makes this movie so great. It is of its time. I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
It is based on a comic book.
Not a graphic novel.
No, I'm not ashamed to say comic book.
And actually, you shouldn't be.
Because, as you know, hashtag, comic books are books too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's based on a comic book by James O'Barr, and it centers around a guy named Eric Draven who is killed in such a brutal way.
Oh, that still haunts me.
Yeah, so he's killed in such a brutal way that the spirit of the crow then brings your soul from the afterlife back to earth to exact revenge mm-hmm. on the people that have killed you mm-hmm. in this terrible way. That's the basic premise of it. And it is of the time. It's dark. It's grungy. The fashion, for one, you can tell.
Yes.
It is from 1994.
Mm-hmm.
When, you know, South Africa had their first democratic election. So it is of its time in that sense. But the story and the cinematography, I would say, is more evergreen.
Mm.
Because of how dark it is, they tend to hide a lot of things. So they get away with a lot of special effects that still hold up to this day.
Definitely.
So you get caught up in this world. And, okay, people are assholes. Like, comically, they are assholes in this world. But the way he exacts revenge on each of these people that did him wrong is just perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And at the center of it is a love story. And that actually adds to the brutality of how they kill him and his girlfriend.
Yeah, the depth of the grief.
Yeah, because there's this... I'm going to be honest, it gets a little rapey, it gets a little gross, it's brutal, but it's brutal for a point.
Mm-hmm.
It's supposed to be this heavy, huge sin that has no other option but revenge.
Yeah.
That's the only thing he can do.
Mm. Or redemption. It needs to be redeemed.
I like to think of it like revenge, people needs to die. I like that angle. I understand like it's a mistake that needs to be corrected, but these motherfuckers gotta go,
they gotta go
in the worst possible way. Brandon Lee, great his best performance in my opinion.
Yeah.
He was starting, leading up to this film, he was kind of in, I wouldn't say low budget action films.
B action movies.
And for him to be the son of Bruce Lee, it was kind of a sin because, you know, he had that name behind him. But unfortunately, he died during this film.
It's a very technical thing that happened, but it was... Normally, the prop guns still have gunpowder in them because that's how they get the noise, the bang from the guns.
Yeah.
There was a projectile in front of the area of the gun where the bang goes off.
Yeah.
And that's what got fired into his body.
Yeah, because bullets usually have the actual cap on
at
top.
The back,
that's
yeah.
what fires at the person.
Exactly.
So. Okay, there are some conspiracies that it was a murder, but I like to think that it wasn't a murder. It was just a terrible accident. So they had filmed like 80% of the film, and they had to finish it.
Yeah.
So they were trick photography and...
It was sort of, quite incredible that they got...
Yeah, using doubles, trick photography, and they managed to finish the film. And I think I couldn't tell for one.
To be honest, I think if... For a lot of people who aren't aware of that backstory, if we had not said it, most people wouldn't know how much of the film still needed to be...
Yeah.
Like, how much of it is actually the trick photography and things like that that they are getting to show Brandon Lee.
Yeah, to the point where I actually tried to find it, and you can't always find it. Like, they hide it well with stuntmen and you know...
The angles of the
blocking
camera.
And so on.
And the lighting, like you said as well.
Yeah, the lighting... Listen... In 80s and 90s films, right, to get away with special effects, lighting is your best friend. The darker you can go, the more you can hide.
The more amazing everything looks.
Exactly. Also, one last positive about this movie is the soundtrack. One of my favorites of all time. Burn by The Cure. I still bump that shit in my whip, yo. So, The Crow is number three for me.
I think that's an awesome choice. I think Brandon Lee was... It's so sad to see how brightly he stars shone in this movie and how charismatic and how he carried this film.
Exactly.
And then to die the way that he did. But yeah, definitely a good choice.
Yeah, R.I.P. Brandon Lee, R.I.P. Bruce Lee.
Yeah, man.
R.I.P. Jet. No, Jet Li's still alive.
Don't mention Spike Lee next.
Number two.
My numero two is actually number one on IMDb's top 100 list and has been number one for the very longest time. The Shawshank Redemption. I think everyone loves this film. This is one of those feel-good...
Everyone?
Everyone loves this film. I think it's got a 9.9 out of 10 on IMDb.
Well, why not a 10 out of 10?
Because there's always going to be a 0.1 dwarf somewhere.
There's always a dwarf somewhere. Deserves a 10 though.
Anyways, this film is actually one of the few films, in my opinion, that is significantly better than the book. Mm-hmm. This is based on a Stephen King book. It's actually not a book per se, but what he calls a novella. So it forms part of a... It's one book with four stories in them.
Yeah.
And the book's title, the story's title is actually The Shawshank Redemption and something about Rita Hayworth. So the Rita Hayworth poster is the first one that Andy puts up in his prison cell. It's directed by Frank Darabont, who's actually done a bunch of Stephen King adaptations.
Ooh, we sorry to cut you, but we have to do a Stephen King thing where I just sit here and Jody just speaks about fucking Stephen King.
Random Stephen King.
Yeah, that would be amazing.
I read just about all the books. The movie is so much better than the book in this instance.
Yeah.
The book gives us kind of the bare bones story. Very similar story. It's told from the viewpoint of the character Red, who in the movie is portrayed by Morgan Freeman. He does all the narration in the film as well.
Yeah.
But who's actually an Irishman. With red hair in the book, which gives us the iconic Morgan Freeman line when Andy asks him, or Tim Robbins asks him, why they call you Red?
Red. Name's Red.
Red. Why do they call you that?
Maybe it's because I'm Irish.
Now do it in your Morgan Freeman voice.
I don't have a Freeman.
Must because I'm Irish. No.
That's Morgan leaning towards Nelson Mandela.
Yes, I'm Morgan Freeman as Nelson Mandela. No, yeah.
This movie is... It's brilliantly paced. I feel like the story unfolds at a leisurely, very gentle pace, but also...
And it's a long running time.
It's a long running time, but right. That helps us to like get the sense of Andy's own journey, which is... I mean, he digs himself out with the bloody chisel the size of a Bible. I think that what they managed to do on this movie is what I would hope other film adaptations do, which is use the core of the story, and if you can enhance it in some way, don't disrespect your material.
Yeah.
Go with that. Every single decision made in here, from the casting... to the way the story unfolds, was the right one.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, with most other Stephen King adaptations, that's not the case. But this one is far and away my absolute favorite Stephen King adaptation, but somehow doesn't find its way at number one on my list of adaptations.
Easy with the teasers. Easy with the teasers. This is also one that you just have to watch every few years or even every year.
Funnily enough, Ross, this film bombed at the cinema completely. It was totally shut out at the Oscars as well. I think it only had like one nomination, or one or two nominations.
Sometimes
and won absolutely nothing.
Make a mistake.
But it was one of the first instances where the video sales of the film and the video rentals of the film actually managed to make a profit overall.
That's actually the first time I saw it was in video rentals.
Exactly.
Shout out Dalvis in Crawford.
Shout out Mr. Video.
we had to hire a VHS machine as well.
The good old
because we didn't have one at home, so we had to go hire not only just the movies but also the VHS.
The machine.
Yeah, the machine.
Did they give you the spray to put on the heads?
No, yo, what fancy way. Yes, they gave it in like a cage, like a lock cage, so you can't like fuck with
like
it.
Like they do at the pharmacy.
Yeah.
snip it off when you get off.
Shawshank Redemption. I'm going to watch it soon. That itch is starting to come, so I think I'm going to watch it soon.
Chick.
Great number two, Jody. Great.
Great, my boy.
Great, my boy.
Welcome back, players.
Welcome back to the players. Hoe gaan we met jullie? You're so brave.
Got your number two,
man. Okay. So, my number two for this week is Road to Road to Perdition. No, it's Road to Perdition, based on the comic book by Max Allen Collins. In the movie came out in 2002. It stars Tom Hanks.
One of my favorite
roles. Hollywood's dad. Sure. I love this guy. My wife doesn't love him at all. She doesn't like him at all.
What's wrong with her?
I don't know.
It's Tom Hanks.
Yeah, but it's, you know when you don't like an actor, Suma?
No, man.
You have that as well. There must be an actor that you just...
But it's not Tom Hanks.
Yeah, who is it?
I don't know. I don't think.
So the movie stars Tom Hanks, Paul Newman. Amazing performance from Paul Newman. Daniel Craig, who I forgot, like, before I watched it in a few years, I always forget that
he's not someone I associate with.
Yeah, and Jude Law.
Yeah.
It tells the story of a father who is a hitman for an Irish mobster. He keeps his sort of family life apart from that, and his sons don't really have that understanding of what he does. So, you know, one night, one son tags along with his father and actually hides in the car and gets to see what he does for a living, basically, which is kill people. Then the son of the main mobster, played by Daniel Craig, decides that he, in order to keep things quiet, is going to murder the family of Tom Hanks. Although there's some jealousy there, there's a whole dynamic.
The main mobster is Paul Newman's character, Daniel Craig plays his son, who is jealous of Tom Hanks' relationship with Paul Newman.
Oh my word, such a lot. But I don't necessarily want to give it away, because if you haven't seen it, you should really watch it.
You really should.
Tom Hanks and his son, they then have to go on the road because they are on the run from the Irish mob, basically. They send out hitmen after them. And one specific hitman is Jude Law, in possibly his creepiest performance ever.
Far and away.
He's the type of killer who he kills people and then takes pictures of their dead bodies. And collects them, hangs them on the wall, framed and everything.
Why not?
Yeah, fucking psycho. Horrible teeth.
Just embrace yourself, man.
So the son sort of gets to discover his father and learn about his father and build a connection with his father that he never would have if this didn't happen. I mean, it's a tragic thing, but it makes their relationship stronger, and he gets to see a side of his father that he hasn't seen before. Tom Hanks, amazing performance. One of the differences from the book to the movie is the performance is a little bit colder than the father is portrayed in the book.
Okay.
So in the book, the father is to the point, as little words as possible, but there's a warmness to it. In the movie, he starts off super cold, but you find out why, and you realize he's just lost everything. He's trying to keep his shit together, and he's trying to keep his son alive. It's the costumes are amazing because it's set in the Depression, the 30s, 40s, Prohibition era. So the cars are there, the wardrobe is there. It's set in winter, so it's super cold
and
snowy. It's actually quite depressing, but they have a destination in mind that they're trying to get to, and it's just on their journey. I love this film, and it hits me, kicks me in the dick of my heart every single time. Man.
And this is one of those films that, just thinking about it, I get like a feel for the color. Feel? It's very hard to describe, man. It's like the color of this film, the color palettes that they use, that constant cold weather, the raininess, the overcoats that they're all wearing all the time, and the hats to protect themselves from the rain.
Yeah.
It's like you get, it stirs up emotions.
But yeah.
Like all of that is done so well.
I think the reason why the movie looks like that is because it's directed by Sam Mendes.
Yes.
I mean, just from the latest movie from Sam Mendes that we've seen is 1917. He has that ability, man. Yeah. He creates that world and he shows it to you in the most beautiful way. Not only beautiful, but authentic, exactly.
For me, it's that immersion. Like, you are in it.
Yeah.
You feeling that rain. You are like the environment is, it's so essential to the story, I think. But you feel fully immersed in this film once you start watching
it. Yeah, and Tom Hanks fucking, look, it's top Tom Hanks.
Playing against type, I would say, because people associate him as America's dad, you know, in terms of he's warm, he's funny, that type of thing.
He started in comedy.
Yeah, he did. But to see him in this type of role.
Cold-blooded killer. Mm. Just shooting motherfuckers left and right. So dope.
But still, a father's love for his son is core to his story. So, I love this one.
Love this one.
Love this
one. Tell your friends. Wrote a petition.
Check it out.
Number one.
My number one. You are absolutely going to love this one, Ross.
No.
Because we know you love a good horror movie.
This is one I've actually seen, though.
My number one, The Exorcist. Directed by...
Why'd you have to say it like that?
The Exorcist. Is the music playing? Can you picture the priest under the lamplight?
No, fuck off. Anyway.
Oh, directed by William Friedkin, based on the book by William Peter Blatty. Absolutely amazing, amazing movie based on an absolutely incredibly scary book. This is another one where I actually saw the movie first.
Okay.
I mean, this movie was massive. I think everyone, all of us have seen it in some way. We all know about Regan, the twisting head, the spider scenes going down the steps.
Yeah.
The preacher trying to get the demon out of it. All of that stuff is like... We probably all saw it also like way too soon. I'm pretty sure we were way too young.
It was that time in our lives. Your parents just put the fucking movies on. Yeah. I was watching like people's heads blown off in Predator and stuff. Anyway.
This movie and the book are both legitimately scary. The one thing that I will say I prefer in the book, that I this is why I would encourage people to actually read this book first and then watch the movie, is that in the book they are able to flesh out the relationship between the priest, Max von Sydow's character, and the demon a lot better.
Yeah.
So they give us the backstory in the movie, but they can't dive into it too deeply because there's a lot else that they want to focus on. But fleshing that relationship out, showing us how the priest had the initial battles with him, and it was actually eventually redone in the prequel Exorcist movie with... Peter Sarsgaard in the lead. Sarsgaard in the lead.
Yeah, I saw...
Not great.
I saw that. It was not good.
Yeah. So, I think that for me, it actually makes the scene where the preacher eventually pitches up at the house and confronts the demon again. Mm. The impact for me there is like that much more. And I actually feel that other people are missing out when they don't get that same like, ugh, this battle's about to go off. Yeah. It's like everything Batman vs Superman should have been. Just slip that one in.
Full circle.
I think that the movie captures the sense of dread amazingly well. The darkness from page to film is it transcends perfectly.
Mm.
Like all that anxiety, all that fear, all that dread that I read or that I read, I feel in the movie.
Mm.
And people who don't read, they feel it immediately as well. This film was, I think, the first horror movie to be nominated for an Oscar. I'm not sure if it won. I think it might have even won the Oscar.
I have no interest in researching horror movies, so I don't give a fuck.
I think this movie, it's a timeless classic. Max von Sydow has an absolute, not a massive role in this film, but it is immense. He makes this movie.
Was the book scarier than the movie?
I'd say equally scary. Scary in different ways also, because they can dive into certain other things in the book, but the movie brings to life certain scenes in ways that the book can't.
Mm.
Like the actual things that happen in the bedroom once the preacher is trying to get that demon out, Regan's vomiting, the head twisting, stabbing with a crucifix, all of that stuff, the movie does so much better than what the book does.
Okay.
But the book's ability to dive into the backstory aspects gives you an added sense of dread when you see everything unfolding within the film.
Yeah.
So I think they are both equally scary. Amazing, amazing film. Brilliant book.
Sounds nice.
So nice.
No, the Exorcist, it scared the shit out of me. Because most people our age saw that movie when they were younger.
Yeah.
And it fucked me up, man. Uh-huh. I think that's part of the reason why I don't like horror movies now.
It would do that to you.
I know. And then fucking call me a bitch or whatever you want, right?
I wouldn't dare.
Yeah, you would. But I don't see how people would want to experience that emotion every single time, over and over. I don't get it.
But that's because you're done, bro.
I know, I might be, but real respect's real, man. And that movie is so solid. It scarred, I think it scarred millions of people.
Yeah, I'm sure.
It was apparently cursed, the set.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Dude. So, apart from all the... There were numerous injuries on set. Like, I think someone died, actually, while filming this movie as well. The actress who played Regan got injured from screaming all the time.
She broke her back, Nick. Basically, her back, her back or her neck.
Yeah.
While she was convulsing.
While she was doing the convulsions.
Yeah.
The set... People were so sure the set was cursed. And subsequently, we also got some more interesting news that one of the cast members ended up being a...
serial killer.
Yay!
Yeah. Yeah. Turns out, one of the guys who was on the crew who was working on the film, he was actually a fucking serial killer, man.
Yeah, so not the best set ever.
No, not the best set, but you know, authenticity, that's what they were about. And it comes through in the film.
Some evil spirits
scared the fuck out of me. Anyway. Okay, my number one pick. Mm-hmm. Okay. In terms of quality, who's to say? 51% on Rotten Tomatoes and 6.6 on IMDb, but I fucking love this film.
Mm-hmm.
My wife loves this film. We watch it every year,
mm-hmm.
more than once possibly, and it's 30 Days of Night.
Oh.
Yeah, so 30 Days of Night is based on a comic book by Steve Niles, right? And Ben Temple Smith is the illustrator behind it. I mention it because the illustration is so unique, and you can see it bleed into the movie. Mm. So the pages are black is the base for everything.
Mm.
And the reason for that is because the movie is set in Barrow, Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
And the sun sets during this period in winter for a solid 30 days.
This is the best premise for a vampire movie.
It is the best premise for a vampire movie. So these group of vampires obviously find out about this town. Then the fucking sun sets for a month. And they realize, you know what? Sounds like a buffet to me. And vampires invade this town for a month to basically just pick people off one by one.
It's their time share, man.
Yeah. It's just like Mykonos. It's like Club Mykonos. It's just their time.
Oh.
Nobody must wants to go in the winter.
There is most a vampire song. It's like Club Tropica and that drinks of free, but it's something about this Alaska.
Yeah, yeah. Barrow, Alaska drinks of free. So, that's the basic premise of the movie, but Josh Heartthrob, which is my nickname for
Heartnut for everyone.
Yeah, Josh Heartthrob, perfect as the sheriff of the town. So in the book, he is already with his wife and they're in a loving relationship. Mm. But in the movie, he's estranged from his girlfriend and she gets stuck in the town, but she was just visiting. That adds a dynamic to it because they basically, through this traumatic event, they kind of fall in love again, which is a nice added layer to the story. So I think that's a positive.
Mm.
Another positive, in my opinion, the vampires don't speak English in the movie. They have their own language.
Yeah.
And they are drawn in the book to be sort of like animals at times. And, you know, the blackness around the mouth and the long nails.
Mm.
And I feel like adding that they have their own language just adds another layer to that, you know, the depiction of the vampires, which is one of my favorite vampire portrayals of all time.
Yeah.
There's a bald guy in here. He looks so fucking freaky. Mm. It's insane. Another performance by the familiar, I think. Are people familiar with the word familiar in terms of vampires?
Mm, they should be.
So, well, if you're not, like, yeah. The familiar is basically like the human servant of the vampires.
Yeah.
And they're not vampires themselves.
Mm.
Ben Foster is the guy that plays the familiar for this group of vampires. Mm. And he sort of infiltrates the town ahead of their arrival.
Mm.
So he steals all their phones and he burns it.
Mm.
He kills all the dogs. He cuts the power, the communication system, all these things in preparation for this month of horror and bloodshed.
Mm-hmm.
I love this movie because stylistically, it is as close to the comics as they could possibly have gotten. The the comics, it's a lot of blood splatter and paint and sort of roughly drawn, and I feel like they made it as true as they possibly could. The town is super dark, but you can see everything that's happening, and it works well with the reflection of the snow in the town. Another solid thing is the fucking music, man. It's unconventional. There's a lot of drum beats, but it builds the
chaos.
Exactly. And the slow burn of the actual arrival of the vampires is one of the best things ever, because when they finally do hit, they hit hard, they hit fast, and it kicks you in the nuts, man. I fucking love this movie.
I wasn't as big of a fan of this film as you are. I remember seeing it at the cinema, and I came out of it, I was like, that was rough. That was like the normal depiction of vampires is always like suave, and you know, the actual blood sucking is just the bite in the neck and then I'm done.
Yeah.
We have never seen such an animalistic portrayal of vampires before. I think we've never seen it this horrific. You know, this like
brutal.
I think that's the perfect encapsulation for it. And like I said, the premise of vampires going to a place with
so good.
When the sun's not going to come up, it's like, why has no one thought of this before?
Why has no one thought?
For me, like the links you made now between the comic and how they actually translate everything in the comic onto screen, it's interesting because other comics that have horror ties, like Constantine, have been very unfaithfully brought to film.
Constantine is not Keanu Reeves.
He's a British.
Don't get me wrong, though. I love that film.
I also love that film.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is that there hasn't been as much loyalty in terms of translating the comic to screen.
Yeah.
And I think this film, from what you're saying now, they are pretty faithful, and the times where they've made changes was for the better.
No, the changes were all for the better.
I think... Yeah,
it's your Shawshank Redemption thing.
Yeah,
because they changed some plot points and so on, but again, it just works so well. There's more meat given to the survival of it. There's the climax is pays off just a little bit stronger. Yeah. So you should watch it if you haven't watched it. And Josh Hartnett must make a comeback, I think.
Again, Josh Hartnett.
Josh Hartnett.
He listens to the show, so stop calling him.
Sorry, Josh. You know, I just kid, I play around, I just joke.
It's Retromendations, Vernolas.
Retromendations for this week. Russ, we've got something topical that happened this week that we are actually going to work into our Retromendations.
Yes.
Yes, we are.
Yes, we know.
So, Sean Connery passed away, and we thought it would be quite timeous of us to look back on some of our favorite Sean Connery films.
Yeah.
I'll go first.
Nice. Love that idea.
My favorite Sean Connery film. I think I'm going to have to welcome you to The Rock.
Oh my God. I knew it was coming, but it was still glorious.
Welcome to The Rock.
My recommendation for this week is The Rock. Oh, this is like Michael Bay and all his royal Michael Bayness. The camera angles, the slow-mos, the American flag waving gently in the wind. It. Nicolas Cage being somewhat tempered. I say somewhat because he still manages to cage up every now and then.
Yeah, he's not full cage.
He's not full cage, but he's pretty...
Right amount of cage.
Yeah, it's the right amount of cage. But Sean Connery, I thought, was just awesome in this role. The whole thing about, like, escaping from Alcatraz, because that's, like, a big conspiracy theory that even though Alcatraz was apparently impenetrable, there were people who managed to escape from it and actually survived, not, like, escaped and died. So using that, getting Sean Connery to play the British agent who did it, and, like breaking him out of jail to then come and go back into the into the thing. It was awesome. I loved it. It's my favorite Sean Connery role of all time. Good. And I highly recommend that everyone goes to check out The Rock.
We always watch The Rock. We always watch The Rock.
You cannot not watch
it. You can't, and I like it. Like, he comes out of jail because he's been in prison for like fucking forever.
Yeah.
And he's like this analog guy in a digital world. Okay, I say digital world.
It was like the 98 digital.
So he has everything memorized, and how he gets back into the prison is all memorized in his head, but he can still like kill people.
Yeah.
So dope. And it's, The action is ridiculous, but it doesn't feel ridiculous.
It's not actually as over the top as some other.
Yeah.
It doesn't ever get like insane.
Maybe. It's like Michael Bay, but he's only had like one hit of cocaine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One nostril.
Yeah.
The right nostril.
Yeah, yeah. The right nostril. Okay, my pick for the best Sean Connery film. There's a lot to choose from, but I'm going to choose one that sort of had an impact on me when I was a kid, and that is Highlander.
I am immortal.
Best theme song of all time. I am inside me, blood of kings. I'm going to play it when I leave.
Yeah. I've just pumped that in the studio on the way home.
It came out in 1986. I can't even believe. Like, okay, to give you guys an idea, and even you, Jody, to give you an idea.
Yeah.
A lot of my cinematic or my movie experiences come from VHS tapes, movies and stuff. Because we didn't go to the movies often.
No.
It was all fucking videos, bro.
Yeah.
And this was one of my favorites. Why? Because it tells the tale of immortals, right? They live on Earth forever.
All came from Scotland, apparently.
All came from Scotland, the birthplace of humanity, Scotland. They come from Scotland, right? So they're immortals and they can die. There's only one way they can die, and that is if they lose to another immortal in a sword fight by decapitation. Okay?
Wonderful way to
This is definitely a wild fucking story, but it's amazingly told, right? You have Sean Connery in one of my favorite roles because he is up against, or he's sort of a mentor to Christopher Lambert. So you have to do it almost like you're throwing up.
Yeah, basically.
Okay, Christopher Lambert.
That's when it ends with a T. You mumbok on the T.
Christopher Lambert. And then Clancy Brown as the villain, one of the scariest. Okay, granted, my first experience, I was a kid. So he scared the shit out of me when I was a kid.
Yes.
They fight with swords. Okay, all right.
Some of it doesn't.
Yeah, some of it doesn't hold up. The sword choreography is not the best. I mean, we are spoiled for action at this point in our lives. I think it's time appropriate,
though.
Yeah, it is time appropriate. Also, the special effects are not the best. There's this whole thing where they do the quickening. Once you kill another Highlander, they're not actually called Highlanders.
No.
They're called Immortals or something.
Yeah, I think they're just called Highlanders because they're from the islands.
No, let's call all of them Highlanders.
Yeah.
If you kill another Highlander, you get Highlander powers. It's called the quickening. So every time you kill an Highlander, you get stronger. And this game keeps getting played until there's only one left. So there can be only one is some kind of the catchphrase of the film. And I feel that shit. I feel that shit right now.
There can be only one.
There can be only one. And then they chop him up.
You're going to go cut some heads.
Some decapitation.
A lot of people probably remember the series with Adrian Paul that used to come on.
Yes, but it's not the film.
I know. I'm just saying, for context, a lot of people remember the series, Adrian Paul and his love, Tessa.
And that was like, it wasn't the same. They were kind of related.
They were from the same clan.
Yeah.
Because he was Duncan MacLeod from the clan MacLeod.
Yeah, and he was
Gavin MacLeod.
Gavin?
But his name was Gavin.
Or Reggie, I can't remember. I'm Gavin MacLeod from the clan. Gavin is the worst name. No, he's Duncan. Duncan, and the other one was Connor.
Yes.
Connor was Christopher Lambert.
Yeah.
And Adrian Paul, he played Duncan.
Mm-hmm.
So they do. They do meet
in part 3.
Some movie.
Yeah.
I stopped watching after 2. Right?
Yeah, there's a shitload of sequels that just happened. Avoid part 2 like the plague.
No. It's watch part good. 1. Be aware of the time that it was made. But the performance of Sean Connery is really one that stands out.
Yeah.
He sort of plays the mentor and friend of Christopher Lambert. And spoiler alert, when he does die, it's super sad and super painful. Because their relationship was so strong. So Highlander, check it out. Go hire it.
Mm-hmm. Go get the VHS and the machine there, yeah. Dalvin.
Dalvin is closed, dude.
Yo, bro, what did I do with that? Do you still have the machine?
No. I'm sure I had a fine, though. I definitely had a fine.
That's why they closed.
Yeah, oh, my God. Don't put that juju on me now. Okay. Tell the people how they can talk to us, Jeremy.
Talk to us on Instagram. Go look us up, Bioscope Russell Podcast on Instagram. Tell us what your favorite Sean Connery movie is, guys. What was your favorite Sean Connery film?
Yeah, we'd love to know.
We'd love to hear what yours are. We know that everyone's going to choose The Rock, but like, give us different reasons.
Yeah, try not to choose The Rock. Like, choose something else, like League of Extraordinary. No, don't choose that.
Gonna get a lot of entrapments.
Hey! I'd say Dr. No to that.
Also, if you want, you can hit us up on email at bioscoperasa@gmail.com.
Remember to stay safe out there, guys. Save Jody.
Save Ross.